O'Connor Reel 5. One thing which impresses me on reading the accounts of the operations at the time the Greek adventure was at a fairly advanced stage, mm-hmm. and at the time you had achieved your outstanding success at Beta Farm, is that the Greek operations had sort of got a momentum of their own, which would have been difficult to hold up unless very substantial reasons had been presented to Wavell about the possibilities of further successes in Tripoli. And the thing which I'm still not quite clear of in my own mind is whether your appreciation of the situation, which I think is that it would have been quite easy to have made a further advance into Tripoli, was known to Wavell. Did he have that information at the time?
I don't suppose he had completely, really, and I don't think that it entered his head at that moment to go on to Tripoli. He was completely, as I understand it, involved in the Greek campaign, and anything that happened in the Western Desert was only insofar as it helped in the Greek campaign. And I think that was the position at home also. They thought that we'd done sufficient to ensure the safety of their left flank, which was quite wrong, actually. They didn't ensure it. And therefore, everything could be concentrated with little risk on the operation for Greece. Nothing, I don't think, would have changed Churchill except Wavell's doubt himself of the probability of success in the Greek campaign.
Were you at any stage tempted to drive straight on to Tripoli after Beta Farm without obtaining formal approval?
I did. I was tempted. But I resisted it at the time because I thought I thought at any rate for a couple of days we'd probably be involved in finishing off the battle, and I didn't know really how complete our success had been. And it's only really with hindsight that I know for certain that we could have got to a Tripoli without difficulty. But as I think I said before, being able to stay there was a much bigger problem, and one which would have involved great difficulty in standing up to the heavy German air attacks which would have developed from the area against Tripoli.
Can we talk now about the command structure under which you operated at various stages of the Libyan campaign? And would you first of all just describe for me what the command structure was at the beginning of the campaign?
Well, yes, I can do that. As I told you, I was ordered to come to Cairo and report to General Wilson, and I was under his command. And I was sent down to the desert to take charge of the Western Desert Force, as it then was, which was directly under General Wilson's command. So I was under his command. When this question of a raid was broached by General Wavell to General Wilson, the operation was still under the control of General Wilson. And that control, as I found it, was not burdensome to me in any way. In no way did he interfere with the actual plan or tactical dispositions or in any part of the actual operations on the ground. He was only there really as to help in any way he could. In fact, I mean, it's impossible in my view that somebody at Cairo could take personal field command of operations 700 miles away, as they were, or many hundred miles away. And so, as you might say, I didn't find that the command in the early days was in any way irksome or difficult from my point of view. I had excellent cooperation from General Wilson's staff officer, Brigadier Galloway, and it all worked out, from our point of view, perfectly well. But we got no instructions. From the one single instruction we got from him, and that was all. And the rest of and that was the only instruction I ever had for the whole campaign.
You say that at the outset you didn't find the command structure at all irksome or difficult. At what stage did the command structure appear to you to be potentially irksome and difficult?
Well, it became rather difficult when I began to lose control of my lines of communication troops. And sometimes, in addition to that, I got conflicting orders on certain things.
Can you give me any examples?
Well, one example I was sent for by Wavell to discuss the possibility of the final advance in Benghazi, and we settled it all, and it involved certain movements behind the lines and various things of that sort. When I went back to my headquarters the same evening, I got entirely different orders from the staff of General Wilson's staff. And so I had to write and say that I couldn't do both orders. And what I intended to do, follow out my original orders with General Wavell, or what? And this resulted in a certain amount of discussion, debate at the moment, but ended quite happily by it being decided that I would work directly under General Wavell as soon as we crossed out of the Egyptian, over the Egyptian border. And the only thing that left was the fact that my communication still ran through Egypt, and, well, technically anything in Egypt were under the control of General Wilson. But I did get the assurance that I would be allowed to arrange my convoys in the way I wanted myself, because I was the only person who would say whether we wanted more ammunition or more water or more stores of other things, and that I could therefore arrange for them to be sent up in the way I wanted and not in the way that somebody else thought I might want it.
One of my reactions to the reading of this command situation is that, in a sense, this problem, to the extent that it was a problem, was one of Wavell's creating rather than Wilson's. I mean by that when it came to planning the advance to Benghazi, which you did directly with Wavell, you were at that time in the command structure still directly responsible to Wilson. And it seems to me, maybe I'm reading between the lines, but it seems to me that Wilson would have had grounds to have been a little upset to think that you were giving direct instructions for a major advance about which he hadn't been informed.
I see your point, and I don't know how far that was actually the fact, as they were quite close together themselves and could discuss it. But it did seem, really, that it was quite impossible, really, to get to deal with two people hundreds of miles away giving different instructions. And it did seem to me that it was perfectly fair, as far as Wilson's concerned, who after all was commander-in-chief of Egypt, that his control should end at the Egyptian frontier. It seemed to me that was a good place and a fair place for that to take place. And it was after that that all my rally that they had to deal with the all the area further forward toward Benghazi. And so I don't really think that he had any grounds for feeling that he'd been aggrieved or hadn't or been bypassed. It just happened that he had to stay still and not come forward, and that I didn't. It helped in no way for me to have to deal with him and then deal with Wavell. In fact, it had been a very great difficulty, really. Mm. And much the easiest was for Wavell to come down as he did frequently, to come and see me on the ground.
This is obviously a very complex situation because I still haven't quite grasped it. There are two things which bother me a little in your explanation, or two things which I don't understand. One is, you said that whilst you were operating under Wilson's command, you in fact had complete freedom and flexibility of operations, and Wilson in fact never interfered with you.
Yes.
You've also said, or implied perhaps, that after the command structure had changed, when you directly became responsible to Wavell, this really didn't affect the conduct of your operations very significantly.
No, I didn't.
What I'm puzzling about is, I don't still quite understand the need to change the command structure since it didn't seem to interfere with you.
Well, I'll tell you. I did say, if you remember a moment or two ago, that I came and had a conference with Wavell over certain things, and that I was given completely different instructions from that. Really was the point which started off the I won't say controversy, it wasn't a controversy really, but I mean the consideration of the fact that it would be better to have one man and not two men dealing with it. And I felt it very strongly myself then, I may say, because it I could not deal with carry out faithfully in my instructions if they were different from two people.
Now, after this change in the command structure, when you became directly responsible to Wavell, you began, I believe, to receive more personal visits from him at your own Corps headquarters. What were the purposes of those visits, and how important were they to you?
They were of great importance to me and a great pleasure. after I became directly under his command, he did a number of times come down, fly down to the desert, stay the day with me, discuss all the current problems, and listen to all my complaints and all the things that I wanted, and said that he would consider them and give me an answer very quickly. And always, without exception, he'd fly back to Cairo, and within an hour or two of his arrival, I would get a telegram saying, for example, your first suggestion, impossible. Second, consider the way we're considering. Third, fourth, and fifth, all agreed to. And so one knew at once what the position was after one of his visits. In fact, one doesn't always welcome the arrival of a very senior commander when one's operating, but in the case of Wavell, not only was he the greatest source of pleasure and help to me, but the same applied to his influence on the staff.
You mentioned in your written account of the campaign, in respect of Wavell, that two particular characteristics of the man, one that he inspired confidence and two, that he created happy working relationships. Could you expand on those thoughts a little?
Yes, I suppose I can. Really, he did inspire tremendous confidence. I mean, not in a flamboyant sort of way at all. He was very quiet. But the very fact of him being about and talking to people, and he wasn't a great talker by any means, he did somehow or other inspire great confidence and trust. And one felt all the time, as I know very well, that he trusted one. And to the extent that if you made a plan, he would almost certainly agree to it, provided, you really thought that it was a good one, he was prepared to back it. And what's more, that if that plan had gone wrong, I have no doubt whatever that he would have taken the blame, and any good that came out of any plans that you put forward, he would and did give you the full credit for them.
Can you remember any occasions on which anything did go awry and he did have to act in this way of taking the rap?
Well, I don't think that anything... yes, I do remember once, really. He thought... He came down and said, I see you're rather upset about a number of enemy tanks having escaped when you thought you'd got them. And I said, well, yes, I was, actually. And he implied, don't be too much of a